Well, hi everybody, I'm Larry Jacobs, and welcome to our second Education Talk Radio podcast today, August 15th, 2022. We've got Brian Stevens here from one of my favorite companies, old friends at FundsForLearning.com, the E-Rate Consultants, the E-Rate Specialists, working with schools and libraries all over the country. And my standing joke is, if you're doing your E-Rate forms all by yourself, it's like doing your income tax by yourself, and I'll see you in federal prison. Okay? I know. Okay. So I haven't really been in federal prison, but seriously, go to fundsforlearning.com. You won't be disappointed. The website has great information for you right off the bat. But seriously, if you want to get every dollar you deserve right on time, please check out Brian, John Harrington, et cetera. Julie Fitzgerald, hi everybody over there, okay, at fundsforlearning.com. They'll really help you, okay, as they help thousands of school districts. Sounds like an infomercial. We're not doing an infomercial. We're going to talk about the Emergency Connectivity Fund program, give you an update on what you need to know, et cetera, and where you can get even more information on it. And Brian Stevens is here from Funds for Learning to do that. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, ACE-ED.org, the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. And if anything, broadband, E-rates, etc., are an equity product and an equity necessity, okay, an accessibility necessity in school districts all over the country. Okay, and that's why we do these shows with them, because what they have to say is so darn important. Okay, go over to ace-ed.org. You'll see our magazine, the brand new issue, our back-to-school issue, if you will, okay, of Equity and Access Magazine, our online journals over at ace-ed.org. Just click on the cover and enjoy the magazine and all the articles over there. We also have our awards program, Excellence in Equity Awards for Pre-K-12. You can nominate yourself, your school, colleagues you work with, companies you work with, et cetera. It's all about equity. So please feel free to just click on the awards icon, okay, and see what we got there. We're very concerned about the educator shortage. We want great teachers to stay teaching. So we work hard on teacher retention. Hence, we have teacher-retention.com. You're important to us. Okay, so please go over there and see what we're doing over there. That site is constantly evolving. All right, and we have seltoday.org. That's our resource center for SEL products and services. Okay, again, all linked at ace-ed.org, and that's where we're going to put this podcast when we're done. Okay, so, and that's under the podcast icon. So please, look at a lot of stuff doing these days. We all head back to school, so check it out. I'm Larry Jacobs, and my guest today is Brian Stevens. You there, Brian?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning, my friend. What was that in the background a minute ago? I just heard a small voice in the background. What was that? Was that John?
I don't know.
I heard a little voice in the background. Maybe I'm hearing things, okay? And I thought it might be my good friend John Harrington. You're the owner of the company, the president of the company. And hi, John, if you're listening or whatever. Okay. You down in Oklahoma today, Brian?
I am, yep.
Give us the update on the weather in Oklahoma.
It's hot. We're forecasted for over 100 today with a heat index of like 106 or 107.
Oh. So, how's it been over the last week? Has it been? That's terrible.
It's been about like that for, yeah. They said this morning on the news that we've had about double the number of over 100 degree days than we normally have in any given summer. So it's been hot and dry all summer.
Yeah, that's not good. Okay, I remind everybody, hot is one thing, dry I don't like, because that's where the Dust Bowl started in Oklahoma. Okay, and I don't like it when the weather's not good down there. I want weather to get better up there. We have the same thing up here in Maine, except we call it a deep freeze. Okay, and it usually happens in January, February. It stays like minus 10, minus 15 for a week. So I feel your pain. Okay, but the opposite way. So just take it easy, and everybody, yeah, stay out of that lousy weather. It just stinks. Okay, when school start down there? Do you know?
They all the different districts have different start dates. There were several of them that were starting this week. A couple of them started last week. So they're kind of staggered around, but everybody's pretty much going back now.
Yeah. Good luck, kids. Good luck, teachers. You're going to, it's a tough year. We're coming off this pandemic, and hopefully it's going to be the best year yet. And one of the things that makes it better, okay, is good broadband. How was that for a segue, Brian?
It was excellent. Yeah, absolutely.
That was good. Thank you. Thank you. And one of the key things, and this grew out of the pandemic, you know, the dollars that came through. Well, actually, let's start a different way. Just tell everybody about Funds for Learning and what you do down there. Start that way.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, we are an E-rate consulting firm and compliance firm. So what we do is work with schools and libraries, basically all participants in the federal E-rate program, helping them understand the rules, follow the rules, you know, retain documentation. Ultimately, what we want to do is make sure that schools and libraries are maximizing the benefit that they get from both the E-rate and the Emergency Connectivity Fund program. And so that's sort of our focus and where we fit into the larger school broadband picture.
And I want you to say, you just struck me when you said something. You go in, you help school districts and libraries figure out the E-rate rules. Anecdotally, when you go into a typical school district or a typical library, how much do you tell them? I mean, like they go, oh, my God, I never knew I could do this before. Okay, oh, my God, look how much more money I've got. Oh, my God, you've got this. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, that happens from time to time. So, you know, one of the big things that we like to do when we first start working with a new to us school district or library system is just sort of assess where they're at with their technology. We definitely want to make sure that if they're already purchasing something that's eligible for funding in the program, not receiving that funding, obviously, we want to get it on a funding application as soon as possible.
Right.
And so we do that. In a lot of cases, we get brought in because a school, they might have been, you know, doing E-rate on their own for a little while, but they want to do a particularly ambitious project. So maybe they want to build out a fiber network, or they're going to do a very large network infrastructure project, refresh Wi-Fi in all of their buildings, something like that. So, you know, kind of big dollars, high stakes type things. And so, you know, we would be brought in to sort of assist with those larger and more complicated applications.
Right. You get, ladies and gentlemen, please, okay, check this all out. I mean, these dollars are extremely, extremely important. That's all I can say. Thank you. Now tell us about the Emergency Connectivity Fund, ECF. All right. It's new. Will it continue? What's the status? How's it working? What are the changes? That's enough to keep you talking for 2 minutes. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us the update.
Yeah, so the Emergency Connectivity Fund program was created as a part of the American Rescue Plan Act. There was more than $7 billion allocated into the program, and its focus was providing funding for connected devices, things like laptops, Chromebooks, tablet computers, as well as off-campus internet connectivity. So we saw a lot of hotspot service, you know, hotspot devices and service funded. In some cases, schools paid for like cable modem or DSL circuits to student homes using these funds. But that was really its focus, was you know, trying to make sure that schools had resources to enable their students to do remote learning during the pandemic. And so they ran three application windows. So schools had three chances to submit these funding applications. When it was all said and done, they collected about $8.4 billion worth of funding requests from schools and libraries across the country. So right now, where it stands is that there actually is more money requested than there will be available for distribution. And so they are issuing funding commitments now. They continue to review and approve applications. They're up to about $5.6 billion that's been approved or committed.
Wow.
Is the term that
wow.
And they got a ways to go yet.
Are they going to get more money?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, there was a little bit of chatter about potentially there was a letter that a bunch of that was submitted on behalf of a bunch of congressmen and women that, you know, was the ask was not super specific, but they said, can we fully fund this program? I think the implication was, hey, can we find enough money at least to be able to satisfy the demand, from these first three filing windows? Haven't heard much movement on that. Those sorts of things are kind of hard to gauge. Where it stands right now is that they are prioritizing the third window applications. Schools that applied in the first two windows, as long as they did it right, they should get the money. For the third window applications, they have to come, they go by basically by poverty level. They start with the schools that have the highest concentration of students qualify for free and reduced lunches, and they kind of work their way backwards. And so they'll continue to do that unless additional money is found. And that can come potentially from Congress or from another source. It also could, some schools might have been approved for funding that ultimately they decide that they're not going to spend for one reason or another. So as previously approved applications are reduced or canceled, some of that money kind of goes back in the pot, so to speak, and it can be redistributed.
That's interesting. Does ECF actually keep tabs on whether the money was – how long do you have to spend the money, and how do you prove that you spend it on the right thing?
The FCC extended the deadline. So one of the things that we saw very quickly, initially the funding applications had a deadline to make purchases of June 30th of this year. And what we saw just almost instantly were, supply chain issues, chip shortages, labor shortages in some cases, the kind of unrest overseas, all of these different things sort of contributed to, schools and libraries being ready to make purchases and just flat not being able to, just because of delays. And so the FCC extended the deadline. First two windows now, it's June 30th, 2023. For those third window applications, it's the end of December of 2023. So they've got a little bit of time now to use the funds that have been committed. On those funding applications, they actually provide information about what it is that they're purchasing. So, they would say, I'm buying a Brand X Model 123 laptop, and then when they go to actually be reimbursed for that purchase, they have to provide an invoice that shows that that's what they purchased.
And how is the Brand X 123 laptop, in your opinion? Just kidding.
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah, it's the top of the line.
Don't buy that one. Don't pay any attention to product endorsements by Brian. Don't do that. Okay, the Brand X 123 does not work. Okay? You said that the money's going to be dispersed to the school districts, quote, as long as they get it right. That means as long as they get it right on the application. And my question is, what's the percentage of applications that don't get it right? Is there any idea?
Well, right now there has been about $250 million that has been denied or canceled, and that's really for a variety of reasons. This being an emergency program, one of the unique aspects of it is that unlike the E-rate program in ECF, the program itself did not impose any specific competitive bidding requirements. In E-rate, there's a whole process schools have to go through to put their products and services out to bid. For ECF, what they said was, as long as you're following your own state and local purchasing rules, whatever those happen to be, then we're in good shape. That actually made the ECF program a little bit less complex. So many of the denials that occur in the E-rate program are because of missteps during that bidding process. That doesn't exist in ECF, so there weren't nearly as many denials for that reason. In some cases, schools requested funding for products and services that were not eligible under the terms of the ECF program, things like that. So the denial rate right now is very low. I think that it'll probably, as they're getting towards the end of the applications that they have to review, we'll see that climb a little bit. So, some of the more complicated applications or things that are questionably eligible as they continue to make decisions on those, we'll see that inch up a little bit.
And Brian, do you think that the right schools applied? Were there any rural schools and urban schools? I mean, that seem to be the two top areas. Okay, if I may, I may be wrong there, but I got a feeling that's right. Say it again. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Definitely. We saw applicants of all stripes, large, small, urban, rural, you know, just kind of across the board. You know, it was a lot of the determination as to whether to participate in this program, at least initially, really had to do with what shape schools were in at the time this program was announced and got started. So we did talk to a lot of schools initially who said, hey, this is fantastic, but I've already purchased all the stuff that I need prior to this program starting up. And there wasn't a way for them to go retroactive and be reimbursed for some of those purchases they made prior. So you did see some schools that didn't participate just because, you know, at the end of the day, they had already purchased everything that they were going to need to be ready for remote learning during the pandemic. So I would say if there was one, you know, kind of deterrent to participation, that was probably it. One interesting pattern that we did see is that there were lots and lots and lots of individual schools. Things like religious schools, individual charters, private schools that heretofore had not participated in the E-rate program that sort of came out of the woodwork for ECF. And so now are participating in both programs, which is excellent that they're, you know, availing themselves of that opportunity.
Were they not allowed to participate in E-rate, or they were and they just chose not to?
Yeah, in general, are allowed. So, there are some eligibility requirements for the program, but, you know, most of those types of schools are eligible to participate. I think in some cases, especially with E-rate being a discount program, you have a private school that has a relatively affluent student population. The discounts that come back from E-rate are not necessarily huge. So there's a question about the amount of time it takes to do the applications and be compliant versus the benefit that you receive. Situation.
Well, it the whole thing. By the way, I apologize for that coughing in the mic. I thought my mic was off. Okay, when I had a cough a minute ago. Sorry, folks. That's nauseating. So I apologize for that. Okay, but it's really interesting the way this, and you know, education's education, all right. And we got to take care of people, make sure they're all right and doing it. You know, I have to ask, during all this with the pandemic, okay, and the need for better connectivity and the need for the use of E-rates, did you find that more and more school districts were getting involved with Fund for Learning? Did they finally get it? That's good.
In general, I think there were a lot of, a lot of our existing clients that we work with for E-rate joined up with us to do the ECF applications as well. We also did applications for a lot of new schools and libraries with whom we had not worked with in the past. And I think, a lot of that is it's a brand new program. It's, heretofore, it's temporary as of today. And there's no legislation that is, slated to continue this past its sort of one-time, sort of economic stimulus kind of basis.
Right.
But nevertheless, there's rules and regulations. There will be audits that happen in the future of this program. They've already said that. And so I think that, and there was a lot of gray area in the regulations. I mean, they can't just be – E-rates had 25 years, to sort of hone its regulations and processes and things. This was very new. And so I think a lot of schools really wanted to, bring on a professional to kind of help navigate those and mitigate some of those risks.
Right. And, it's interesting. One of the questions we were planning this show, okay, and I found this interesting. You asked one of the things we said I was going to ask you, and I am going to ask you, what resources are available right now for an E-rate coordinator at a school district who might be new to the job? And I'm curious, that's a question in and of itself, but it begs the question, are there people specifically assigned to be the E-rate coordinator at a school district? What do you find?
Generally speaking, yes. Yeah, so what we find most frequently is that there tends to be one individual to whom the responsibility for E-rate lands at the school district. And most of the time, that's going to be someone in the technology department. We work with a lot of technology directors, CIOs, those types of individuals. Sometimes E-rate will fall In purchasing, sometimes in larger school districts, they will have like a grants and funding sort of department. It'll fall there. But in general, what we find is that, you know, they're 9 times out of 10, there'll be a person at the school district. That's our E-rate person. What we know, though, is very recently we are seeing lots and lots and lots of changes in that role. So there's some things we can do to sort of gauge that. One is we took a look at the responses that we received back from our annual applicant survey. We do a survey every year of schools and libraries participating in the program. Many of the contacts that took our survey last year, we received, you know, bounce backs when we sent them the survey this year. I'm no longer at the school district, those types of things. Well, we're also seeing changes year over year in the contact person that's on the form. The actual forms themselves have contact information. You will see the same person for 5 years, and this most recent year it's somebody new. And so we know kind of anecdotally that there are a bunch of folks out there who this is kind of their first round of E-rate. You know, the responsibility landed on their desk for better or worse, and so they're, you know, going at it for the first time this year. And so there are a lot of resources out there that are available. You know, we provide some things for free. So we have a newsletter.
Yes, you do. Funsforlearning.com. Yes, you do.
So lots of, you know, news, things to stay up on. If there's rule changes, procedural changes, make you aware of that. We do commentary and analysis as well. We also do a monthly webinar. And that's free as well. You can sign up on our website. And those webinars are really the topics we discuss or whatever is sort of happening in the E-rate cycle at that time. So right now we're talking about planning and procurement because those are things that schools need to be thinking about at this time of the year. Later on, you know, towards the application cycle, we'll talk about filing the applications and those types of things, do demonstrations and all of that. So that's available as well. USAC, the E-rate program administrator, also has a lot of resources available. We know that they'll be doing some training webinars this fall, so you can stay tuned for that. Hopefully those will be recorded and it'll be available on their website, you know, so that if you are not able to watch live, you'll still be able to go back and view those. They already have some webinars recorded on their site as well. They've been doing a real big training push here recently, and they're doing a good job at that. So they make a lot of resources available as well.
That's excellent. You know, I hooked up John. I introduced him to a gentleman I know down in Texas, right along the Tex-Mex border. And I was talking to him, and he was talking about the incredible lack of accessibility in the school districts. Okay, these very poor school districts that string along the border down there, American school districts, but. You know, there's some real challenge. I know John talked to Joseph about all this. And it raises the question, Brian, in your opinion, okay, where are we at all this? I mean, do school districts get it? Do they understand it? And just anecdotally, there's a percentage of school districts that are really behind, okay, and that can't be anymore because it's an equity question. Okay, what's your thoughts on that? And I don't know. Yeah, and again, I know you don't have the exact number, but just anecdotally, what's your feel on it?
Yeah, you know, I would say that the numbers are moving in the right direction. So a few years back, the FCC in one of their orders had established a connectivity target. It was based on some data that this State Educational Directors Association, that they had pulled together, and essentially, you know, by the end of a five-year period, what they had established as a goal for internet connectivity was essentially 1 megabit of bandwidth per student, 1 megabit of internet bandwidth per student in the district. And so we partner in a project called Connect K-12. We partner with a nonprofit called Connected Nation, and the two of us together have put together this site called Connect K-12. It's at www.connectk12.org. And what we track is internet bandwidth delivered to school districts and the costs associated with that. And we're in our third year now of doing that. And if you look at all the numbers, what we're seeing is that the bandwidth are increasing and costs are decreasing. So that's good.
That's good.
That said, there's still a long way to go towards, the 1 megabit per student goal, some people agree that that's a good goal, some people don't. I think you've got to have some sort of a benchmark, and that's what the FCC chose.
Yeah.
But if we use that, we can kind of get progress toward it, and we're seeing movement on that. So each year, there's more and more districts that move from not meeting that goal to meeting it, which is fantastic.
It really is. And, I just feel, every school district just has to jump on this. This is key stuff. You can't leave your kids behind in this 21st century world. Okay, and we just got to make this happen. That's all there is to it. And the resources, again, fundsforlearning.com, besides the consulting work they do, they offer, as Brian said, a lot of resources. Okay, so please check it all out because, I just don't want to miss the boat anymore because you never make this up. Okay, we just got to make it happen. Thanks, Brian. This was great. I really appreciated this. Thank you.
You bet. Absolutely. It was great talking to you.
Well, I love having you guys on. To me, this is so incredibly important. All right? And it just boils down to equity and access. And there's no excuse for not learning more and getting it done. 1 megabit per kid. That's all. Okay? Let's make it happen. Brian Stevens, thanks a million. And don't go outside today. And don't buy ice cream and drive home. Okay? Yeah.
Safely in my office.
Stay there. Turn up the air. Thanks, Brian. You take care, buddy. Be good.
You too.
Let's pray for rain. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And may it rest through a rain dance for rain in Oklahoma. I don't like it dry down there. Okay. We're going to archive the show. Again, it's at funforlearning.com. We're at ace-ed.com. No, we're not. We're at ace-ed.org. Okay, sorry about that. All right. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is for K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.